Welcome, everybody, to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, tips, tricks, and coaching discussion for all cyclists, from beginner to advanced, from casual rider all the way up to advanced racers. I'm your host, Coach Rob, and for today's show, we're going to talk about Tour of the Baton Kill 2013, what it takes to prep, what it takes to survive, and what it takes to race an event the magnitude of Tour of the Baton Kill. Okay, little info first, Tour of the Baton Kill 2013, they're going to have 44 fields, folks, okay? Five for juniors, seven for masters, two for women. Two for women's a big one, and that's increased from last year. Three for Cat 3, seven Cat 4 races, and 16 Cat 5 fields. 16 fields of 50 riders each, folks. Today is November 8th, and registration actually opens for Baton Kill in almost in exactly a week. Actually, it opens November 15th, and if you're thinking about racing it, you're going to want to get in there real quick. The Cat 5 fields last year sold out in 7 minutes, and last year I believe they had 14 Cat 5 fields, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong in that, but either way, 7 fields of 50 people. You're talking somewhere in the neighborhood of 700 people registering in about 7 minutes. So if you're thinking about hopping in there, especially if you're a Cat 5 and you're new to it, you may want to set on your calendar for November 15th at 7 p.m. Eastern as your start of registration. So that being said, what really caught my eye with Baton Kill, and what really was sort of the prompting inspiration for this podcast, and most of you who read my blog would normally know that I would write a post on this, but there's a little bit too much just to cover in a post, and it was a Facebook posting by the Tour of the Baton Kill, which specifically asked them, why do you race Baton Kill? Okay, and there were tons of answers to it. There was probably 100 and some odd answers to this, but something that struck my mind and struck me as very important was the number one answer for why you race Baton Kill was to suffer. Okay, Baton Kill is known to be a tough race. It's known to be extremely hard. It's early in the season. In this case, it's in the first third of April, April 13th, really, second weekend of April. So it's early in the season, and it's a very tough race, 65 miles, and if I pull up the elevation profile here provided by Tour of the Baton Kill themselves, we're going to find that we're looking at 5,000 feet of elevation gain on this year's profile, this coming year's profile, 2013 profile, and I'll go through that profile and we'll take a look at it. I'll have it posted if you're listening to this podcast from the Daily Grind Cycling Journal or tailwind-coaching.com. On the blog part of this, you'll be able to see the profile and follow along here. But for those of you, again, who aren't familiar with it, Baton Kill, Tour of the Baton Kill Valley, is a USA Cycling sanctioned, and I believe UCI sanctioned this year again, race up in Cambridge, New York, right on the Vermont border, right across the border from the Green Mountain State Forest, actually. Not too far from Saratoga Springs, maybe 25 miles at most. And it's an absolutely beautiful race. It's a brutal race. It's 25% dirt roads, which is basically America's answer to the pavé, the cobbles of northern France, for Paris-Roubaix. In fact, I believe part of the race actually falls on the day of Paris-Roubaix on April 13th, if I remember correctly, but I could be wrong on that as well. But let's talk a little bit about the race course itself, and about what you're going to expect to see in this case. If you're following along from my Ride with GPS link, which I'll have posted again under this podcast, you're going to start in the city of Cambridge or town of Cambridge. And let me actually preface this again. I'm speaking from some experience on this. I've raced Baton Kyl previously. In fact, I've raced on almost this exact same course, and I have had a when I raced this course, I had an utterly terrible day. It was a very warm day. When we started, the temperature was in the mid 50s. Okay, and we're talking for early April when we'd had nothing but feet and feet and feet of snow. So all of our training had been either indoors or out in the extreme cold. And both myself and probably, I would say, about half of the racers in my field succumbed to ridiculous cramping. We were just blown away and beaten by the weather conditions. I mean, it ended up being in the upper 70s that particular day, which made racing all the more difficult. I would have actually even preferred a rainy day in the 50s would have been much better. But anyway, coming from the experience of racing this almost same course before, taking a look at our at the race course itself. You get a rolling start, a 5 mile rolling start on Route 313. You're going to swing a sharp left at Eagleville Road, which basically will cut you under the first iconic covered bridge on the route. And that right there is kind of where things will start to get grippy. After that, you'll make a sharp right-hand turn onto Robertson Road, which is actually a dirt road, and that'll be the point where things will really start to form up a little bit. You'll continue across. You'll see you're continuing onto Camden Valley Road, which is pretty nondescript. You're going to start a basically a gradual incline. But then you're going to veer off. You're going to veer left onto what is Perry Hill Road. Now, this is the point where you're going to want to be, unless you're an extremely, extremely gifted climber. This is precisely the point where you're going to want to hit the front of the field, and hang there, because Perry Hill Road has some segments on it that actually hit upper, lower teens in terms of percentage, 13, 14%. Okay. And that's where the field will really start to split a little bit. Luckily, this downhill, if you get popped off the back, you just chase back on, and you get yourself ready for Juniper Swamp Road, which is sort of the almost the crown jewel, one of the two really crown jewels of this race. Juniper Swamp Road is a brutally steep little climb. It's maybe 1 or 2 tenths of a mile. It's on dirt. It has a maximum grade of like 18% at one point. You want to get near the front, and you want to try to avoid being deep in someone's wheel. If they stop or slip like wheels tend to do when people stand on dirt or loose pavement, that's not even pavement, on loose terrain, A, you're going to get a face full of gravel and dust, and B, you're going to be stuck behind someone who just came to a grinding halt. You don't want to be there, trust me. Having to chase on after Juniper Swamp, from experience, is not a fun thing to do. Okay. So moving a little bit further along here, the next real stretch, you're going to have some up and down rolling terrain as you're following County Route, was it County Route 64 or 84? I can't quite tell. Which then changes, County Route 91, it looks like. Anyway, but in any case, you're going to have a few rolling climbs, nothing really dramatic, fairly short, gradual stuff. There's a new segment to this race where it turns left on Route 22 and then onto Cemetery Road, and then to Black Creek Road. I'm not familiar with that. I haven't scouted that yet. If you haven't scouted this route, I recommend you actually do the preview ride, which is generally 2 weeks prior to the race itself. But moving on from there, your next major obstacle that you're going to run into, and looking at it on the terrain profile, there's a spike right in the middle of the right about mile 27 and a half. Jobian Road, a climb that has some undulating, varying gradients on it, upwards of 10% at the hard places. If you're still with the pack, this is generally where a group's going to go off the front, and that's probably going to be your winning move for the day, so be wary of that. Following along from there, you're going to hit what I called the dirty center section of the route, between mile like 34 and 40, 42, 43, Kearney Cassidy Road, County Route 62. Is that 62? County Route 62, and McCormick Road, and there's some dirt roads in there. There's some gravel roads. Very undulating terrain. It saps your strength. If you're really not careful and if you're really not racing well, it's going to be a very tough point for you. Moving on from there, you'll basically hit upon Mountain Road, which is a long, not very steep climb, but it is challenging. You'll hang a left on Vlies Summit, which is actually different from the route that I used, although it's similar to what I did last year in the preview ride, following State Route 40 south, Meeting House Road, the other crown jewel of Tour of the Baton Kill. Very undulating, all dirt road, which will give you'll either make or break you at this point. If you're feeling strong, you can try and get away there. If you're just barely holding on, it's gonna be tough. It's gonna be very tough. The right on 74 is fairly uneventful, mostly downhill actually. The sharp left onto County Route 59 will take you again downhill, a short, flattish stretch before you hit the final challenge of the day, Stage Road, unpaved. It's a nasty, nasty little climb. It's kind of undulating, stepped profile. But if you've got anything left to give it a go, this is where, if you're not a one of the typical rollers or a very good time trialer, you got to make your move here. Otherwise, you're not going to be set up for it, unless you think you can win a small group sprint. So once you cross mile 60 and hit the descent of Stage Road, it's about a 3 mile flat run in to the finish, which is in was on Main Street in Cambridge. Again, a little different from when I raced it, but nevertheless, a could come down to a sprint finish. If you expand the last 3.5 miles, you're talking about 100 feet of elevation gain and only 110 feet of loss in that last 3.5 miles. So it's a really, really good place for someone who's a strong time trialer to get away from a small group, or if you're feeling confident, sit in and try for a group sprint. But all right, enough of talking about the route. What do you need to do to be in contention and to really be there at the end to take advantage of that route? Well, Baton Kill is really a very intense race. It's a very climbing specific race. If you're not really a climber, you're probably going to have a very difficult time at this race. That's not to say that you shouldn't be there, shouldn't go there, or shouldn't enjoy the race, but unless you really have decent climbing chops, it's going to be a tough ask for you to be there at the end and there in the final to hope for a win or a podium spot. But really, if you're going to be training for bat and kill, you got to keep a few things in mind. Bat and kill, especially because it's on dirt roads and it's on rough terrain, you're going to need skills on dirt road riding, skills for handling your bike on dirt, skills for riding, conserving energy on dirt and gravel roads. A quick note, when I race this, the race occurred in, again, the second weekend of April. They had just re-graveled some of the roads. Let me tell you, if you guys have never ridden on 3-inch thick sand and powdery dirt, you really are going to be in for a nasty, nasty surprise. Okay? So, handling and dirt road riding has got to be part of your training plan. Okay? And I'm not talking about just going out and hitting a couple of dirt roads once or twice and saying, "All right, I got it." It doesn't work that way. You need to be doing some of your longer training rides on dirt. You need to be practicing some of your fundamentals on dirt outside. You need to really get used to handling thin tires on dirt, on gravel, on rough terrain, and you need to get used to how your race bike performs on dirt roads, on cracked pavement, during climbing on dirt, anything like that. Okay. Bear in mind that handling and riding on dirt, tips and tricks for that, shifting to a heavier or higher or taller gear, more pressure, more tension in your pedals, lower cadence with that more tension will help to keep the rear wheel from spinning, will help to keep you nice and stable on the bike. Shifting to the back of your saddle, hands on the tops like you were climbing, or even hands in the drops shifted towards the back of your saddle will give extra traction on your rear wheel, and it will keep you from spinning out. It'll keep you more confident. Particularly with hands in the drops, it will keep your center of gravity much lower, and you'll feel more confident on the bike. So that's a few tips for your dirt road riding, your dirt road handling. In terms of climbing on dirt, you're going to want to consider that you have a loose surface, and you're going to need to be aware of that. Spinning a wheel on Juniper Swamp Road while you're mid-pack, and the guys at the front have decided it's time to go and we're going to drill it right now, is a really a bad thing. Okay, so when you're climbing on dirt, a few things you need to keep in mind. You need to think about your body position. Most people, when they're off the saddle climbing, tend to shift their body weight forward. As the road pitches up, the body weight shifts forward, over the bottom bracket and forward of the bottom bracket, to try and keep the front wheel down, keep pressure on that front wheel. Going back to handling and riding on a dirt road during your training, you need to be aware of the fact that on dirt particularly, or any loose surface, if you let your body weight shift too far forward, any of the traction you had on your rear wheel is going to be gone. That next pedal stroke is going to spin your rear wheel, you're going to lose your momentum, and you're either going to have to really kick it to jump up and catch the rest of the group, or you're going to stall out, put a foot down, and your race is, in all honesty, in all likelihood, over. You're going to be rest, quote, racing the rest of the day, okay, as a spectator, and that's not what you want to be doing after, 8 or 9 miles of a race. So climbing, again, if you need to keep weight on the front of your bike, take Juniper Swamp Road for example. Get yourself down in the drops. Think about a guy like Marco Pantani, who was famous for climbing in the drops with a real low profile. His whole thing was to get down in the drops, get your weight back over your saddle, even if you're standing up, get just hover over that saddle, keep your the tension on your pedals a little bit higher than you typically would. Don't try to spin your way up, especially if you're standing. Okay? Keep the weight on that rear wheel and you're going to be just fine. The other thing you want to try and keep in mind is to keep a very smooth pedal stroke, especially on anything that you're standing up on and it's dirt, because the choppier your pedal stroke, the more you force, that power stroke, the more chance you're going to spin that rear wheel. And again, you spin a rear wheel and put a foot down, your day's over. And that's something you don't want. Okay, so we have handling on the dirt. We've got climbing. Okay, climbing tips, things that you need to keep in mind while you're climbing. Now, a couple of things that are going to be important, non-terrain specific, things that you're going to need to be able to get through your day at Bat and Kill and not, and to be frankly, not stuck like I was, almost curled up in a ball, cramping on the side of the road. You want to keep a few things in mind, and most of those things are going to be fundamentals. Okay, Bat and Kill being a very up and down race, 5,000 feet of climbing and 65 miles is an extremely tough race. It's not an easy race at all. In fact, it's as it's billed, it's one of the toughest races in America. It's America's toughest one day race. So you need to put a priority on your muscular endurance, okay? The ability for your body to continually put itself under pressure, continually put pressure into those pedals without breaking down. And that's going to be very, very important to ensure that you make it through the hardest portions of that race. Okay, Perry Hill Road, Juniper Swamp Road, the dirty middle, as I call it, Meeting House Road, and have anything left for something like Stage Road. Okay, you're talking about huge, huge requirements of muscular endurance. We're talking muscular endurance intervals at some point during your training that should be lasting in the neighborhood of 30 to 45 minutes, and maybe even longer than that. Okay, if you're out doing, for example, a dirt ride, a dirt road ride, getting your handling in, you might do 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 minutes of muscular endurance work on those dirt roads just to prepare your body for the challenge it's going to face. Okay, even though you're riding in a pack, you're riding in a racing peloton. You can only hide from the wind so much, especially on bad terrain like dirt roads, gravel roads. You need to really, really think about that muscular endurance requirement. So, if you're whether you're following one of my training plans, which to shamelessly plug myself, click on the training plans tab, okay, above the podcast here, and you'll see my Bat and Kill plan, which is 18 weeks, focuses on everything that I'm talking about here. And that's that. There's my plug. Amazing how it got slipped in there. Whatever training plan you're following, whether it's mine, whether it's somebody else's, you need to emphasize muscular endurance, okay? Aerobic endurance is not that big of a deal. Aerobic endurance will be built throughout your training. You need to really think about protecting your body from breakdown, because breaking down at any point during Tour de Bat and Kill is not going to be a fun, not going to be a pleasant experience. Okay, I can tell you that from personal experience. It's not a good thing. Okay, keeping other fundamentals in mind. Leg speed. You need to be able to to range your leg speed. Okay, vary the cadences and the tensions and the pedal tensions that you can work within. Okay, you have to be able to work from 60 RPM with an extremely high pedaling tension, all the way up to 110, 120 RPM with maybe almost no pedal tension while you're sitting in the Peloton cruising down Route 29. If you don't have that range, if you're one of those sort of one-speed riders that so many, amateur racers or beginner racers or even just everyday, casual cyclists or group riders are, you're going to have an extremely tough time on a race that's as taxing as this. You have to be able to range and limit the damage done to your various energy systems by ranging your cadence, ranging your pedal tension, and ranging your muscular tension. All right. You might find yourself on Juniper Swamp doing 70 RPM, just hammering. Your muscles are under, just screaming under tension, you know, just tight, solid rock tension. You might come right over the top and you might just be, you know, pedaling 110, 120, 130 RPM, flying with that pack going downhill with almost no tension on the pedals. You have to be able to switch those energy systems from that muscular endurance, that anaerobic, high tension, low cadence system to that completely aerobic, high cadence, I'm sorry, that anaerobic, low cadence, high tension system to a very aerobic, high cadence, low tension system when you're back in the pack. So that's something you need to practice, you know. Things like single leg drills, spin-ups, blocks of tension work, blocks of high cadence work, low tension work. Those are all going to be keys to include on your training plan. Again, whether it's mine or somebody else's, or if you're just pulling your own training plan together, that's something that you need to think about, is your leg speed, your cadence control, and your tension control. And that ties right into your muscular endurance. If you're a one-speed rider, you're going to tire out 30 miles into something as difficult as this race. And once you tire out, again, you're not going to stick with the pack, and B, you're just going to have a bit of a bad day. And that's not what you're paying $85 to register to do, is have a bad day. Because remember, once the neutral service car goes by, you're not getting a ride from anybody unless it's either in an ambulance or you can con somebody to come and pick you up. You're going to be stuck out there, and you got to ride your way back to the start-finish line. So we've got things to focus on are going to be dirt road handling, dirt road riding, climbing skills, muscular endurance so that your body doesn't break down, ranges of leg speed and cadence and muscular tension, and a couple of key fitness elements to think about while you're training for bat and kill. Racing of any kind, group rides of any kind. In fact, one of the best ways to build your aerobic fitness, your aerobic endurance, consider your VO2 max, okay? VO2 max repeats, VO2 max repeatability, all right? Racing and group riding, think of it this way. A group ride that's of 2 hours will come down to maybe 20 minutes of actual above threshold work. 20 minutes of above threshold work. Because if you're being smart, you're getting low on your machine, you're staying aero, you're using the draft, you're hiding from the wind, you're only taking short pulls, you're not pulling the field for 15 minutes at a time, you know what? You're only doing a little bit of above threshold work. And in the case of bat and kill, you're going to be talking those climbs, all those nasty climbs, Joe Bean Road, Juniper Swamp Road, Perry Hill, Mountain Road, Meeting House Road, Stage Road. You got 5 or 6 points where you're really going to have to dig deep into those VO2 max reserves. You're going to have to burn matches, all right? And if you're staying with the group, other people are going to try and shake you off the pack, or, you know, off the back of the field. You need to be able to accelerate and recover at threshold or just above threshold to be able to do it again. That's where your VO2 max repeatability comes in. Okay? Zone 5 efforts, recovery at threshold or just above, and then repeat over and over and over again. This is how you build matches and how you learn to recover. And you have to have that skill if you're going to be near the front of the pack or you're even going to succeed at bat and kill. Once you're popped off the back, you know, it's a joyride, so you don't have to worry about it. But if you want to stay with that group, stay in the shelter of the group, or even work with other people once you've popped off the back, you're going to need to have that VO2 max repeatability. So that's something to keep definitely in mind, something to add to your training further into your build periods. That's not something you want to be doing during, you know, December and January. There's no point in doing VO2 max, repeatability work in December and January. That's your time for your aerobic work, your muscular endurance type work, your leg speed, drills, your cadence drills, your cadence control. That's for your fundamentals. Okay, your VO2 max repeatability, your matches, that energy you have to burn, and that's what you need to work on building in your build cycles. And you need to really test that in your peak cycles, which are going to be your last 2 weeks probably before that event. Okay. In addition to your VO2 max repeatability, you really need to work on your awareness, your handling skills, your pack riding, skills, and your group riding skills, which is actually quite tough for most of the people who are in the Northeast, especially considering the projected rotten winter that we might be getting. I'm recording this on November 8th, and we just knew, the Northeast just experienced a hurricane of unprecedented size and power in Hurricane Sandy. A week after Hurricane Sandy, we get hit with a nor'easter, which thankfully for me didn't drop much snow, but it's going to be a tough winter, and getting out on the bike with other people is going to be difficult. But it's something that people, if you're going to race Baton Kyl, if you're going to be considering Baton Kyl, you need to be comfortable in that group. I can tell you from experience, they don't call it Crash 5 for nothing. Okay. There's very twitchy, nervous handling. People tend to be very nervous, especially in the lower categories, but wrecks happen in the upper categories as well, especially on dirt roads or roads which are not the highest of quality. So it definitely is important for you to get out there and start experiencing people next to you. Get yourself into a grassy field like a soccer field or a football field. Do some bumping drills. Have your buddy ride next to you while you run into each other, sort of sideswipe each other. Practice leaning on them, practice not panicking, and getting used to contact. Okay, that's going to be one of the best things to save you from crashing in that field, and honestly taking out other riders and other racers besides yourself. That's always the worst thing to, that's always the worst feeling in a crash, is not the fact of, I hurt myself, I broke my bike, or anything like that, but could be that, oh, geez, I crashed and I took out the guy next to me, or the guy behind me, or, I somehow crossed wheels with a guy in front of me and took him out. It's not very likely, but it does happen. So consider getting out and brushing up on your group riding skills. Okay. And lastly, one of the things that has become very in vogue and a lot of people have been talking about, but very few people still do, work on your core. Work on your core strength, your core stability, your back strength and stability. That's what's going to enable you to get into the drops, stay in the drops, stay aero. Work on your flexibility so that you can get down good and low. Work on your core strength, and not just, don't just go and do a couple of sit-ups. A couple of sit-ups isn't going to do much for you. It's not going to help you very much. What you need to be thinking about is that functional core strength, that functional stability. You need to think about stability in your underworked muscles, your transverse abdominis, your obliques. You need to think about your tight hamstrings and glutes, your weak but tight and short hip flexors. Most people who are, lower level racers and amateur racers, beginner racers, actually even most people who are fairly advanced group ride cyclists or group cyclists or club cyclists tend to have very shortened hip flexors, very tight hamstrings, very weak core muscles. I'm telling you, you can actually improve both your handling skills, your muscular endurance, your climbing skills, your VO2 max capability. Everything you can improve it even further by working on your core strength, your core stability. Okay? It's a huge, huge, important part of your body that most people don't even think about. Most people think about, the contact points, your pedals, your hands, your saddle. You think about your leg strength. They're in the gym doing leg presses. They're doing, squats. They're doing things that work their quads and their hamstrings, their gastrocs or their calves, but they're not working and focusing on any of the stability, any of the core musculature that the rest of your body attaches to. Think about it in the respect that your legs attach to your core, and your legs are bridged, if you will, from the handlebars to the pedals by your core. With a weak core, you're going to lose a lot of energy through your shoulders, your hips, your core muscles in general, as they try to stabilize. Now, and you guys have probably, anybody who's listening, you've probably noted when somebody's form deteriorates, especially look at the Tour de France riders, look at Giro d'Italia riders, look at Classics riders. When they're feeling good and they're going well, they're motionless. The only thing going are those two pistons attached to the pedals. Those legs of theirs are pumping away. But when they start to break, especially if you look at some of the guys in the Alpine passes or the Pyrenean passes, when they start to crack, those shoulders drop low, the shoulders kind of, start to rock, the whole upper body starts to move and twist, and they really start to fight those pedals, fight that machine. That's something you want to avoid. That's a key factor and a key determinant of fatigue. Your core is broken down. Your muscular endurance is not going to be far behind. Your leg speed has already gone. Once your core is broken down and you start to fight that machine, your leg speed control is going to be right out the window. Your muscular endurance is going to be right out the window. And you're going to be off the back. You're going to be done for the day. Your day is over. So think about working on that core, okay? Especially on your off days. If you're doing cross training, integrate some core work, some Pilates, some yoga in there to try and strengthen and stretch some of those weaknesses, okay? So, little recap here, handling a dirt road riding. Very important to keep you safe, okay? Leg speed control and muscular endurance. Also very important, you don't want to break down during that race, and you want to be able to have a range of things that you can, a range of pedal strokes, a range of cadences, a range of muscular tensions that you can use to shift the impetus of your racing and your energy production from your anaerobic system to your aerobic system. You want to be able to keep something in reserve in each of those for the end of your race. So, leg speed and muscular endurance on top of your handling and your dirt road riding skills. Climbing capabilities, you have to be good going uphill. You have to have good VO2 max repeatability so that you can cover those accelerations, stay with the group. You have to have decent core strength and flexibility so that the whole system doesn't break down on you, so that you can get low and aero and hide in that group. And you have to have good group awareness. Okay, you have to be able to be comfortable riding in a group, a large group too. These fields are 50 riders in each of these pelotons. So you have to be comfortable riding in a large group of people. You might find yourself completely surrounded by people on every side. You have to be able to be comfortable putting your hand out on that guy's hip as he tries to move into you, or if he hits the brakes, you have to be able to, know your escape routes, okay? Be able to slide into that little slot as it opens. Don't let those gaps open in wheels, things like that. So you'd want to get out there and practice those. Practice your bike handling skills, your bumping drills, you're leaning on people in fields, have somebody try to sideswipe you and move you, stay on your line, things like that, okay? And a quick word on, for those of you in the Northeast, which I know that I have some listeners, some readers who are in the Northeast, there are some actually very good warm-up rides and races, which actually I would recommend if you're going to be racing this is, remember we're talking April 13th, if you're going to be racing Bat and Kill, you're definitely going to want some kind of race pace effort prior to, hitting the saddle for Bat and Kill. In that case, if you're in the Northeast, there are a few good ones. New Jersey people, Hell of Hunterdon is actually an excellent ride comparatively. the sponsor shop, Pure Energy Cycles. I'll give them a shout out. It's a great group of guys. The route is fantastic. It covers, I believe, 77 or 78 miles, so it's a little longer than Battenkill, a little bit less climbing than Battenkill, but it takes in a lot of the same kind of roads, unpaved, really, really crappy condition dirt roads, just like Battenkill. And it's an all-around excellent event. It'll give you the mileage that you need. It'll give you the challenge that you need. It'll put you out there and let you really test where you stand on your muscular endurance, on your leg speed control, on your handling skills, your climbing skills, and all that. I believe that's going to be the last weekend in March. I don't believe it's a firm date yet, so keep a lookout for it. For people in the New York area, Hudson Valley, the Trooper Brinkerhoff Memorial Race Series is a good series for really getting your group ride skills down, getting your VO2 max repeatability skills down, and you know, really, really honing your leg speed and your endurance, and getting some racing miles in the legs. Those are couple of great, it's a great race series. If I remember, it's a 3-race series. It's great vibe, and it's a good opener. Short, fairly cheap entry fee as well. If you're looking for other races, there are a few other early charity events. Nothing that I've done or am terribly familiar with, but again, my recommendation, within the 2 weeks prior to Battenkill, you're talking the end of March to the first 2 weeks of April, you'd want to have at least one event under your belt, whether it's a race or a sort of Fondo type ride. That way you can really test where you're at and see how you're faring. Okay. So, it's been a little bit long podcast. Forty-two minute podcast, a little bit longer than I typically go. But I hope I've given you some insight on what you need to do to really start training for Battenkill. Don't take it lightly. It's not one of the those events where you can just rely on your fitness to carry you through. People really do show up with that as their main goal for the year, and it sucks to be dropped off the back in the first 10 miles. I know a few people who've done that. I know a few people who have suffered through that. I know a few people who have gotten behind the wrong wheel on Juniper Swamp Road and come to a complete halt and had to chase back on, and I'm raising my hand right here, right now. So, I'm probably going to do a few more posts on Battenkill, a few more thoughts on Battenkill, maybe some equipment selection ideas and other things. So, thanks for tuning in to the Tailwind Cycling Podcast, tailwind-coaching.com, the Daily Grind Cycling Journal. Check it out. Keep in touch, and keep watch for any more information on Battenkill. And until then, ride safe, keep the rubber side down, and be well, folks.